Thank you for joining us for a bit of a different type of Flock Talk today. We will be sharing Paul Loomis's presentation at the OSF convention this past October on minimizing food waste. Paul is a respected researcher and professor at the University of Guelph's Ridgetown campus, specializing in ruminant nutrition. With a deep passion for advancing livestock production, Paul focuses on optimizing feed efficiency, animal health, and sustainability in the sheep and broader livestock industries. Over the years, he has become a trusted resource for producers and industry stakeholders, contributing valuable insights to improve on-farm practices. Paul's dedication to knowledge sharing extends beyond the classroom, as he frequently engages in the agricultural community through outreach, conferences, and collaborations that bridge research and practical applications. Here's his presentation on minimizing food waste from our OSF event last fall.
All right. So I think originally I had said top three things. I think that's what the title might be. And I do teach math, but my counting may be off. I think I'm up to 11. But some of them I'm going to go through a little bit quicker. Just talking about top things producers should focus on to minimize feed waste. One of the things we often think about is often a discussion is our hay feeder type. And so I found this trial that was done in Norway, found it pretty interesting, where they had you can see these four different feeder styles that they had, and they did two different trials on them. The first trial they did, they used either high quality hay or medium quality hay. And you can see the hay losses there, 0.9 kilograms a day to up to 1.3 in the feeder on the right-hand side there. And So that's about a 70% difference, or like the high end, they're wasting about 70% of the hay that they were on the worst feeder on the right hand side there. They didn't report feed intake actually on these ewes, but it was probably somewhere around 1.5 to 2 kilos a day is what they were probably consuming. And so that looks like a big number, but when they redid the trial, they actually had some fairly poor quality hay. And you can see the numbers were almost the opposite direction, where the feeder that was the best also became the worst feeder in terms of hay wastage going on. And so I think that feeder design, there obviously is something there going on, but I think there's too many other variables in the picture for us to know exactly which feeder is the best one always to be using. Keep on thinking this. Another thing that I guess I always would have just kind of thought, assumed, was that our feeder design in terms of throat height, how high it is off the ground, and the basic design, we often talk about, you know, we need to have the bunks up off the ground for sheep. And I've seen that written in places. And so I've kind of come to the conclusion, when I find someone who makes a recommendation like this in sheep, you better start digging and find out where they got their numbers from. Because I've found numerous times where it wasn't actually done in sheep, it was done in another livestock animal, and then we just assume it's that way for sheep as well. I can find nothing that talks about that in sheep, saying that the feed bunk should be high and that should be this throat height or whatever in order to increase feed intake or decrease wastage. And OMAFR does some publications, so I actually contacted Christoph, there he is back there, and I asked, what were these numbers for? And it was really more to do with other management issues that those recommendations were put in place. And so I'm not sure we know, and maybe there's some work that has to be done on that to find out what would be the best bunk design to minimize waste. This study that was done in Norway on that second study that I had shown, they did something interesting. And I'm not recommending this because, oh my goodness, if I recommended this, I'd get laughed at probably. But anyways, what they did is they actually took the round bales and they sawed them in half. So they either fed a full bale or a half bale to the animals. And look at the wastage. It dropped in half when they put less feed in the bunk. And so I'm not saying, again, I'm not going to recommend that we go sawing our bales in half. I think our days are full enough without trying to do that. But maybe we should think about overfilling bunks. I know my hay feeder, I can fit two round bales in there at a time. Maybe not anymore. Right? Because that was nice. I got the tractor started doing everything like that. I just might as well put two bales in right now so I don't have to put more bales in a number of days, whatever. We do get a lot of waste. If you look at the graph there on top, you can see there is a large difference, again, with the feeders. That one on the left, very little wastage when it was a half bale with a decent amount of wastage on a full bale. Whereas the one, the third one, which was the best in the first trial, they both were kind of bad. So again, there seems to be a lot of variability there, but be careful about overfilling. Yes, I can save labor by maybe filling once, but I could also be losing a lot of hay when I do that. This is something that again, I could not find any research on, but we all know it to be kind of true because we see it. I have a friend who had hogs, and I just bought a feeder off of him to feed my lambs. And, you know, at first you do is you open them all the way up so they can get all the feed they want, and all of a sudden you just notice there's all sorts of feed on the ground, and they're just basically almost pawing the feed out of the feeder. And I don't know what the right number is for sheep. With hogs, what they would say is if you look at the bottom of that trough, that last step's a loser. Anyway, that feed down there, didn't notice that there's a step there. I'm so busy looking at that. That you don't want that to be more than, you want that to be 50% covered in feed. If it's more than 50%, they're wasting feed. And if you can see in a hog barn, if you can see feed on the slats, you're losing at least 10% of your feed is going down into your manure pit. And so what they try to do is they try to close it enough that the pigs have to work to get the feed out, but you don't want to close it so much that they have to work so hard that they don't get the feed, they don't grow. And again, what that number would look like for sheep, that's a fantastic question, right? We all know that we can't have it wide open because otherwise they waste, but we also know that we can't have it too tight, otherwise they can't get their feed. And so again, playing that line between there, I couldn't find any actual research data to say, you know, this is where we should be. Exactly on that. Hay quality. This is something I find, this is again, probably most of you have seen this intuitively. The numbers on the left were the same trial. This one on the right is a separate study, so we can't necessarily, we have to be careful comparing them. But if we look at the high quality hay, the sheep wasted a half a kilogram of hay per ewe per day. Medium quality was 2 kilos, and the low quality was 3 kilos of hay a day. And that has a much bigger impact, for example, even than the feeder design. The feeder design, best to worst, was 70%. Here we're talking 4 times, right? It's the high quality hay is 25% of the waste. And so that is going to have a massive impact on it. I believe your best number to look at is actually not reported in this study, would be your ADF. Right there, you can see we have NDF. ADF is going to be the amount of lignin and cellulose. That's the most indigestible parts. As a matter of fact, lignin is not digestible at all, and cellulose is digestible, but they have to work at it for a long time. NDF is just going to be those two things plus the hemicellulose. So, for example, I would say if you have a high NDF and a lower ADF, if you have two feeds that are the same NDF and one's lower ADF, that's going to be a more digestible feed because that portion that's different is going to be more digestible. So you can see there that the low-quality hay is like 66% NDF. That probably means it's around 50% in that ballpark ADF. And then that high quality stuff is 50% NDF, which would probably be about 37% ADF. Anyways, that would probably tell you a lot about the whether or not the sheep are going to waste it. Poor quality hay, they just pull it out of the feeder, especially if it's really stemmy, long stuff. They're just going to pull the stems up. We've all seen it, and they're going to waste that feed. Chop length. This is something, again, this is interesting. And I could find nothing at all that looks specifically at the chop length of the hay and the wastage. We all, again, this is one of those things we all know it to be true because we can see it in our barns. One of the things that I would really like to do, maybe first I'll talk about this. I did find a research project that was done in Germany, and they use either short hay, 7 millimeter, or long hay, 35 millimeters long. And they found it had no impact on dry matter intake. Now, one of the things that you have to be careful when you read a research project, most of the time when people are saying the word dry matter intake, what they're actually saying is feed that disappeared from the feed bunk, right? This trial, they didn't talk about wastage at all. So if those sheep would have taken that hay and thrown it on the floor, they'd say, oh, that's dry matter intake because it's not in the bunk anymore, right? We weighed it before and after. It is I don't understand physiologically how there could not be a difference in dry matter intake in those different chop lengths, because if a feed is shorter, it's going to have a faster passage rate. And once an animal has a faster passage rate, it's going to eat more feed. Okay. So the shorter the chop, the higher the dry matter intake it's going to be physiologically. And that diagram up there on the right, I don't want to get into a lot of details on, but that's basically showing that argument. The better the quality of the feed or the shorter the chop length, the faster it gets out of that rumen, the faster the new feed can come in. And so that's that bottom line I have there. Short chop feed should have a higher passage rate and therefore a higher intake. This would make sense if some of what we're finding on that long chop, when they say that there's no difference in that difference in impact on dry matter intake on the short versus the long, it's probably because some of that long stuff is falling on the ground. The sheep are pulling it out of the feeder, so they think they ate it, but it's landing up on the ground. They didn't look at that. Again, they found that it impacted their eating time, though, the short versus long. The ones that were eating the longer hay spent more time eating, and part of that could be, again, time that, first of all, it's going to be time to get the food in and down because of its longer chop, but another part of that is going to be, for sure, are they sorting? Because sorting takes time. The more time they spend sorting, the more they're going to waste. I think, actually, this would be a really valuable research study. I've been thinking about it since I started preparing this talk, actually, is if it would be nice to know what ADF level and how much waste did you get, and what chop length and how much waste did you get, because of course chopping hay takes diesel fuel too, or hydro, it costs money. And so if I know my ADF levels, how much value do I get out of chopping this, and what chop length would be the best in order to get the most nutrients out of my feed? Right now, we can't do the math on that because we don't have those numbers. It'd be cool to be able to just have some numbers that we could just punch into an equation and have a good idea on what that chop length should be. This is leaning again to what Mark was saying earlier. And sorry, I'm just taking a look at my notes here, making sure I don't. If you're not body condition scoring, you're either underfeeding or overfeeding your sheep, unless you're really lucky. If you were to drop me in a foreign country like Japan and tell me to get somewhere and didn't give me a map, if I got to where you wanted me to go, it would be pretty lucky. It'd be pretty lucky that I would get there. And I think the same thing is happening. If you're trying to feed your sheep without body condition scoring them, you're lucky if you happen to be doing it right. If your body condition score is below, you're not getting the capacity out of your sheep. You're not getting what those sheep can genetically provide you. And that's wasting the genetic value, the money you put into getting the genetics out of those animals. If you're feeding above that, you're just wasting feed I think you're also going to waste production capacity because you're going to get more chances of pregnancy toxemia and other issues with your fat or ewes. And so it's one of those things that maybe we get tired of hearing is body condition score, body condition score, body condition score. I think it's really, really important that we just keep your hands on. Your animal should not be able to get by you without your hand dropping on a certain percentage of them, just to make sure that they're all okay and make sure you're getting that right. Another place I think that we can waste our feed is assuming book values on our forages. So I have here an example, by the way, I apologize for the math. I don't think I've done a presentation in front of sheep producers where I don't throw some math in there. Sorry. But let's assume I assume a book value of 18% crude protein for my hay, but it's actually just, it's 19% crude protein, just 1% off, not very much. So if I have 1 ton of 18% crude protein hay, if I correct that for the moisture level that's probably in that hay, I have about 153 kilograms of crude protein. If I have 1 ton of 19% crude protein hay, I can have about 161.5 kilograms of crude protein. And by the way, that crude protein is likely going to be more digestible as well. Because remember, as they get more ADF, more of that protein gets bound up in ADF as well, which is not as digestible. So that's a difference of 8.5 kilograms of crude protein in that ton. If I assume I'm feeding soybean meal, of course, I picked an expensive feed, okay, which that's me cheating a little bit, but I'm trying to make these numbers look good, right? So if I'm going to replace that with soybean meal, 8.5 kilograms of soybean meal, but divided by 48% crude protein, I'm at 17.71 kilograms of soybean meal on a dry matter basis. So I convert that into an as-fed basis, that's 19.7 kilograms of soybean meal. And at 580 a ton, we're talking about $11.40 per ton of hay. That means every ton of hay I'm feeding, I'm wasting $11.41 because I didn't account for the amount of protein that was actually in that feed. And that's being 1% off. You're lucky if you're only 1% off, right? Book values are just book values, right? And when you harvested your hay, it might have been a little bit more earlier. You might be up to 20% crude protein. Well, now you can double that number, right? If you're exactly at, and if you, by the way, if you're at 17%, that means you're not feeding enough protein to your animals. Your animals aren't getting the protein. Your ewes are not going to produce the amount of milk that you hope they're going to give to those lambs. And if you're raising, you're not going to get a lot of nutrition out of the hay for your lambs anyways. But there again, that's going to have an impact on them and their ability to grow. So I would say this goes for all your forages. Things like your grains, they don't change very much. I don't think you have to test your corn regularly. I don't think you have to test, you know, your products that you're buying, like soybean meal and so forth. They're fairly stable, but your forages, there's a lot of variability in your forages, and you're just wasting money if you don't actually test them. Another place I think that people waste feed, you see it when you drive around the country, people are storing their hay outside. There was actually, I don't have to say just a realistic is 25% loss. There's actually been some research on this. If you leave your hay outside, you're probably losing about 25% of the bale. That's, if I just measure the outside 3 inches on a bale of hay, that would be 25% loss. And that's like going out in your field and burning every fourth bale, right? You got 100 bales, go there and burn 25 of them if you leave them outside. Get them inside. My numbers might be a bit dated there in terms of hay prices and shed costs and so forth, but it doesn't have to be a fancy shed. Just get it out of the weather. If you can't, just try to get that hay out of the weather. I think the payback on it will be fairly quick. Spoilage. We all have to be careful, of course, with spoilage. We know what spoiled feed can do to sheep, right? They're not very strong to handle against listeriosis. And so if you're feeding silages, it's important to manage that. If in the silo, make sure you stay ahead of that spoilage. I put 6 or 12 inches because it depends what you're feeding out of a bung silo versus bags. Upright silos would be a little bit less than that. And try to keep them as sealed as possible. Keep that feed away from mud and dirt. When you're picking up the feed off the ground, don't let the tines of your pickup scratch the ground, because now you're throwing dirt on all your feed and you're just putting listeria. Listeria lives in the soil. If we went outside and just took a soil sample, we test it in a lab, there's going to be listeria in that soil. And that listeria thrives in oxygen. It has to have oxygen. It's an aerobic bacteria. I store that feed properly in my silo. There's no air in it. Listeria is dead, gone, no problem. Now it gets exposed to the air and it starts growing, and you get a lot more listeria growing in it. And now I've taken some dirt when I'm doing my pickup and I'm scratching that ground and I'm throwing dirt into that haylage as I'm picking it up, and it gets mixed right into my bunk. Now the face of that bunk, when that soil becomes exposed to air, you got listeria growing and you're just increasing the risks of getting listeriosis. So try to keep it as clean as possible. Keep the dirt off your feet as best you can. The feed bunk, again, keep your feet as fresh as possible, so that, again, we don't get that spoilage going on. Sometimes I get in discussion with people about slick bunk versus leaving leftover. Slick bunk is we put a little bit less feed in the bunk than that they would have eaten. And that way they clean the bunk up every time, rather than leaving a little bit of leftovers. You can see the benefit of slick bunk is now I don't have to clean my bunk out every day, I'm wasting less feed because I'm not throwing that old feed away. The problem with that is it's one of those deals where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, right? The ones who can compete at the bunk, they're going to do quite fine, but your tail enders are going to start losing. They can't keep up because they can't compete for that feed. It's not going to be that everybody says, hey, guys, there's only 95% of the feed we need here today, so let's all everybody just eat a little less. Right? No, it's not how it is. It's a bunch of ruthless siblings beating at each other to get that last slice of pizza, right? And the big one's going to be the one who gets it, and everybody else is going to go hungry. So I'm not a big fan of slick bunk. I don't think it's a great way to go. I think you're going to create too much variability in your flock. Again, you're going to get some ewes that are going to start losing, and now you're going to have skinny ones that you're going to have to get that condition score back on. I think this is my last slide I have here. I don't know how I'm doing for time. I don't look over at Anita because she might tell me I have to hurry up. This is not really a feed wastage as much as it's a money wastage as far as I'm concerned, and that's feeding unnecessary feeds. Over the last maybe 10 years or so, we've done a fair bit of research at the college on different feeding strategies, and I would say that we have shown quite well that lambs grow just as well being fed dried distillers grains as they do being fed soybean meal. And there hasn't been a time in those 10 years that I've ever seen that distillers even comes close to being as expensive on a nutrient basis as what that's what soybean meal is. So I would say that if you put any soybean meal in your diet, rethink it. You're wasting money. Another one I often hear people say is, I have to feed mixed grain to my sheep. You can't feed them straight corn. Again, we did the trial work on it. They do just fine on corn. And depending where you are in Ontario, mixed grains are expensive. They're really expensive. And again, we've shown the cost savings you can have feeding corn versus mixed grain. We did trial years ago on corn silage, and yes, lambs can do okay on corn silage at 25% of their dry matter intake, but if you go higher than that, it slows them down. They can't grow on it. But we did an interesting trial feeding corn cob meal, and I would say of all the trials I've done, that's one where they actually turned out the best. Dried distillers grains and corn cob meal was an extremely economical way to feed lambs. They grow well. Now, one thing I'll put on there too, it depends a little bit how you're feeding, because a lot of lambs don't like the distiller's grains. Sometimes I get people saying, mine like it. And sometimes that might be the case, but often they don't like it. And so if you're feeding a mixed feed or a pellet, they're more likely to eat it than if you're feeding like whole corn and distillers, they might leave some of that distillers behind. So think about again, what feeds you're feeding and try to choose the cheapest ones you possibly can. Thank you.
Hey, Stacy, what's new at Ontario Sheep Farmers?
Well, we have some upcoming events this winter we want everybody to have on radar. WOLPA is hosting a meeting in Bluevale on January 23rd. District 1 is hosting an online education night on lamb survivability featuring Dr. Rex Crawford on January 28th. District 10 is hosting a barnside chat in Winchester, Ontario on February 15th. Jones Feed Mill has two sheep producer meetings coming up next month. One is in Lindsay on February 11th. The other's in Floridale on February 25th. The London Farm Show happens March 5th to 7th. And the Ottawa Valley Farm Show happens March 11th to 13th. We hope to see you there. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Flock Talk, brought to you by the Ontario Sheep Farmers. We hope you enjoyed today's insights and learned something valuable to bring back to your own farm or organization. If you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe where you get your podcasts. And remember, you can always find more resources and updates on our website and social media channels. Until next time, keep your flocks healthy, stay informed, and keep supporting Ontario's sheep farming community. Thanks for listening.